Next up, we're going to talk about the Book of Buried Letters and Inside Past Life Connections. Maren Muter with us, and she's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, lifelong metaphysician and author. Maren Muter has been experiencing what it's like to live inside the veil all of her life, and after studying psychology and sociology while delving into quantum theories, Maren has worked for 20 years as a practitioner in the realm of metaphysics. A couple of her books include The Book of Buried Letters and Inside Past Life Connections. Maren, welcome to the program. Looking forward to this.
Hi, thank you for having me.
What a great titles, by the way. The Book of Buried Letters and Inside Past Life Connections. Tell me about The Book of Buried Letters, that title.
Well, The Book of Buried Letters is exactly what it is. When I was young, starting about 4 years old, I actually started writing poems, predictions, and theories on life and burying them in glass jars.
You dig a hole and bury them?
I would literally dig a hole and bury them, usually with my hands. I would run out into the woods. I grew up in Portland, Oregon, and was backing a park. It was Tryon Creek State Park, and it was this rainforest, and I would run down there, and there was a certain pine tree that had its root bent like an elbow, and in that root, I could dig really deep, and I would stick mason jars with letters buried in that, and then so soon, a whole bunch of trees were now the keeper of these secrets, and they stayed in the subterranean keep for over 40 years.
And did you dig them all up?
We dug up many, many, many of them. And so we have thousands of these letters, and there are probably still jars out there up and down the west coast of the United States. I know that there were some letters that I buried in Australia and some on this little island in Wisconsin.
Did you throw any in the sea by any chance?
I did, actually. I doubt those made it because I don't think I properly put it in a jar that would last. But I did write a letter to my older sister after she passed away, so I was an adult, and threw that into the ocean for her. So,
any predictions come true?
Yes, I did have some predictions come true. So I had predictions, personal predictions, that came through and came true. I had predicted that my sister would pass away, and
I'm sorry to hear that.
And that was hard and sad. I predicted a couple things. I didn't work with. My brain was working with different forms of quantum theoretics. I wrote about mitochondrial DNA in the early 1970s, when I was probably 5 or 6 years old, and I would write about that. I wrote about changing different proteins. I wrote about, you know, being able to change cells and feed them things differently and possibly change their chemical makeup.
Did you see a pandemic in there by any chance?
Yeah. I see a lot of pandemics now.
Jeez.
I know. Crazy.
I've got two different last names for you on these two books.
Oh, I have Maren Meandering. That was kind of my pen name. I did that as fun because I meandered around a lot.
Uh-huh.
And then okay. Maren Muter, and people are like, you know, Maren, you really should actually start using your last name. And I said, all right.
Now, you had a childhood house that you went back later. Anything unusual happen with that?
Yeah. So I went back to go find some more of these letters. I got a note, a message, someone saying, hey, your childhood home is available. It's for sale. I thought, oh, well, that's interesting. I'd love to go see it because so many things happened in that home. It was a haunted house with spirits from the man that built the house, and then there was a little girl that perished in the house, and so she had a spiritual imprint at the house. So there's a lot of memories there that I wanted to go and see. And when I got to the house, we were doing the tour, and I said, oh, you know what? I bet there's some letters in the attic. And I said, there's nothing in the attic. You haven't lived here for over 30 years, and believe me, the homeowner knows this house really well. And I said, I bet there's letters in the attic. And so I crawled up into the attic, went up the little crickety ladder, and there between the eaves and the fireplace, there's a little tiny wedge, and we pulled out letters from between the eaves and the fireplace that were still there.
Did your memory come back to where you were putting these?
It did. I remembered almost exactly where I put every
single
one.
That's incredible. That is something. We're going to get into your works in a moment here, Maren, and that's fascinating. When you talk about pulling back the veil, what does the veil mean anyway?
Yeah, so the veil is actually created by our brain. So the veil isn't, you know, outside of our body. It's our body that's actually creating the veil. Because our overarching consciousness, where all of our memory is stored, where all of the information that we have access to or that we gain even down here on this earthbound plane, is stored outside of our body. But when our brain develops, it's actually closing off these different frequencies, so we don't have information that we don't need in this life. And that happens when we're born. It closes off a lot, and then as we progress and we start understanding and comprehending certain aspects, the frequencies will open up a little more and give us a little bit more information and a little bit more information the more that we actually end up comprehending.
Does the brain filter us to protect us?
It does. I mean, it's not necessarily just protection, but it's so that we can function here as a human being. So imagine for a moment that if our brain was a radio station or radio receiver, and every single radio station on the face of the planet started playing all at the exact same time, and you couldn't turn off any of it, but you had to find the one frequency that was like directions to the grocery store. Well, it would be very, very hard. And so what our brain does is it quiets all of that down. So the only information that we have here is going to be the information that we need basically for our survival and for our interaction with the world around us. In that sense, it is protecting us, because if we had all of this information that was unneeded, we would basically be short-circuiting.
That's an interesting take. Now, is this a natural thing or is this a God-given thing? How did we get this ability?
Well, it's definitely very natural, because that's how we were created. Now, I believe that we do have higher intelligence, and we are designed this way, just as the plants are designed as they are and the animals are designed as they are, and there's consciousness in everything. I mean, basically, consciousness is when you have a sensation of the world around you and you have knowledge of the world around you, then you basically have consciousness. So in their own ways, everything does. But when we become unconscious, basically what we're doing is it's like going into a general anesthetic, which is interrupting the nerve signals in your brain and your body, and it prevents your brain from processing pain, and it prevents your brain from remembering what's happening. So that is all on this earthbound stage in our physical body here, but doesn't mean that the consciousness is gone. It just means that our brain has turned everything off and isn't remembering what's going on. So, yes, I do believe that there's higher intelligence, and I do believe this was designed this way, and it was designed brilliantly, actually.
Yes, it sure was. Maren, we'd call you a metaphysician. Exactly what is that?
A metaphysician, to me, is someone who studies the world unseen. So I study from the brain basically outward. So I look at consciousness. I really want to study what's going on consciously, like how does consciousness work? How does it impact our life here? And how is it possible that, you know, we have memory from somewhere else? We might have memory, and we look at this in children, memories from other life experiences. Or we might be able to communicate with people that have departed or animals that have departed. And so we get conscious attempts at communication that way. And that, to me, is metaphysics. And how does that work, and how does that play in and work harmoniously with what we see in our universal plane? So we look at the universe and we say, okay, well, there is patterning. And there is patterning not only out on the universal plane, but on the earthbound plane, and then also in the unseen plane, so in our dark matter and dark energies and things like that. There is consistency.
What does consciousness mean to you?
Boy, that's a good question.
All my questions are good, Mary.
They're all good. consciousness, to me, just is basically awareness. So, and observation. So when we have an overarching consciousness, we have awareness. So that means that we have thought process. And once it's outside of this body, the human vessel, the thought process might look differently because it's all basically different frequencies up there. It's not necessarily, you know, a tangible human body up on the other side because it is more a frequency. So our brain is taking these different frequencies and demodulating them or translating the frequencies into things that we can understand here. So when I think of consciousness, I think of comprehension, I think of understanding, and I think of awareness, basically.
I think a lot of people are looking for something spiritual to tie themselves into. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are. I think you'll find when we take calls next hour, you'll get a lot of calls from people who get it. They're into this. But how many people don't understand this, Marian?
You know, I think secretly most people do get it. But we quiet it down like we were talking about earlier that, you know, if we don't really need it, if we don't really need to know this and it's not really making an impact in our life, we're not going to be looking for it. We're not going to be, you know, actively seeking it. Now, some people have, you know, this gut feeling. They're like, I know there's more. And they're seeking and they're like, okay, how do I connect to this more? And how do I do that? So we have people, you know, in different realms and different areas of their life, and their lives look a little bit different, but we're all connected. And so that innate understanding is there, even if it's super quiet, even if it's not if it's not looked at.
That's an interesting take. Now, the other book that we're talking about, Inside Past Life Connections, starts by saying, Dear Flower Lady. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So this is... It also kind of gives a backstory to the letter, the Book of Buried Letters. So the Dear Flower Lady is someone that I had known in another life experience. And that's who I ended up writing to as a child. And because the book is about inside past life connections, it shows the awakening to me that, hey, there is another life experience. And I started writing to the Flower Lady as I would camp, like I was away at camp here in this life, and I was writing home and telling her what I was observing, what I was seeing. And so that's who the Flower Lady is. And through the book, we kind of touch on the Flower Lady. I share some more of the letters that we unearth, and it just kind of runs sort of through the story as we talk about how these memories work and how we are able to access them.
Interesting cover with butterflies all over the little girl.
Thank you.
Cute. You like butterflies?
I do. I used to raise monarchs in my bedroom.
Really? They didn't scare you?
No.
Interesting. Do you like spiders?
From sort of a distance.
I want to do a show one day on phobias, and I bet a lot of people don't like spiders.
I just don't want to wake up and have them in my bed.
Oh, no. That is not, or on your face when you wake up or something.
Face. Oh, one time, this is horrible, and I know it has nothing to do with anything, but I was a nanny when I first decided to grow up and leave home, and I had left a bedroom window open, and I had a June bug literally crawl into my ear, so I do not like sharing my bed with anyone. That was so painful.
Ouch. How'd you get it out?
I had to go to the emergency room.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did they get the whole thing?
Yeah, piece by piece. It took like 2.5 hours.
Bugs in the ear.
Yeah, let's not do that.
No, not at all. You have worked as, you're not, you, I can't call you a medium, can I?
Well, you can, but I don't work as a medium necessarily. I do have a lot of, you know, spirit. I do get messages. I do receive messages, and I help people learn how to get messages for themselves. So I actually, you know, teach people the tools on how to open up these different frequencies so you can get these messages coming in. But, yeah,
Marin, through Halloween, we've had a lot of programs on near-death experiences and afterlife and all that. In your opinion, what is the other side?
In my opinion, the other side is something that it really doesn't have human vocabulary to describe it. So that's number one. So I'm going to do the best I can to describe it with the vocabulary I have. And that would be, it is the most incredible depth of compassion, and it's all frequency. Now, the reason why depth of compassion is important is because it's something beyond love. It's something that embraces all of the experience, whatever experience it is that we are doing down here or wherever, whatever planet or universal plane we're on. We're gaining knowledge of, you know, bad things that are happening to us. We understand
sure,
that.
That happens.
We have to do that. But in order to have ultimate compassion, we also have to live not only, you know, understand what happiness and joy and all and love is, but we also have to understand what pain is, because that creates this harmony. It creates a magnificent harmony. And so if we were to leave this body, shed this body, we're going to go into a form of harmony, which surpasses love. I mean, it's just absolutely incredible. And when we hear people coming back from like a near-death experience, many times we hear people say, I just don't know how to describe it. And they well up with emotion. And, you know, they wish they could explain it to you, but we're limited on our vocabulary here, our Earth vocabulary.
Are you convinced that the other side exists?
Absolutely.
No doubts.
Absolutely. For me, no doubts. Now, I know that there's people that doubt it, and that's okay because that's their experience or whatever, you know, is going on in their life. But for me personally, what I've experienced throughout my life, I have absolutely no doubt.
Marin Mutter with us, a couple of her books, Inside Past Life Connections, and also the book of Buried Letters. Her website is her name, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We'll take calls next hour with her. And I'd love for you, when you call her, to share a story that may be related to what you're hearing us talk about tonight, to see if that has happened. I get all kinds of stories from our listeners, Marin, when we open up the phone lines. And the near-death stories or the angelic stories are truly remarkable.
Yes.
I'm a strong believer in angels. How about you?
Well, I definitely believe that there are entities out there like angels, yes.
Do you ever come across anything, I hate to say it, but I got to, demonic?
Now, yes, and that's a very good topic, and that's a very good question. I don't believe that there is anything that is really truly going to harm us. Now, I do believe that there are very scary things out there.
And they want to harm us.
And we have total control over that, whether they do or not. So I do believe that there are things that we can do to negate that experience and to actually stop that experience.
Would you say you're more spiritual than religious?
I'm definitely more spiritual than religious, yes.
I think a lot of people are.
I think.
But you can also balance it, can't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, sometimes people ask me, you know, about Jesus and how does Jesus or, you know, religion play into what I believe and understand. And it's not just, you know, Christianity. I believe that there are segments of every religion that is very important. And, you know, it resonates with people. And if it resonates with you, that's the most important thing to me, that if it's harmonizing with you, if it resonates with you, then it's an important part of you.
Marin, we're going to take a break. We'll come back and talk more. I want to talk about that demonic side that you just mentioned and see what we can do about that. We're going to take your calls next hour with Marin Mutter as we talk about the other side and consciousness. So jump on board and share some stories with us as well. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you, Marin Mutter with us. Marin, where do people get your couple books?
Well, they sell on Amazon, and if they don't want to shop through Amazon, then they can send me an email, and they can buy it through me directly.
Straight through your website?
Yeah.
All right, super. Let's talk a little bit about the demonic forces, then I want to talk about karma.
Okay.
In terms of these demons, you had just said before the break that you don't believe people can get hurt from them. Why do you say that?
Well, I know that, you know, people can be touched by spirits and things like that, and it can seem very scary. I've dealt with bunk beds. People, you know, told me a story of once they bought bunk beds, and the bunk beds would spontaneously combust, and they actually, you know, started
Jeez.
On fire and things like that. So I do know that there is stuff out there that does scare us directly.
Were the bunk beds possessed or something?
Well, actually, what it was it's called a spiritual imprinting, and the wood that the bunk beds were from were harvested from a place that had a forest fire.
Oh, something evil happened there.
And so the bunk beds had what's called a spiritual imprint, and so it's just a replay of the event that took place. So it wasn't a conscious thing. It was just more of a shadow of what formerly happened. But many times when we're looking at scary things, it's what our brain is doing. It's what our brain is actually creating. And I'm not saying that it's being made up, because it's not being made up. But what's happening is we're getting frequencies around us that we don't recognize, that we don't understand, and our brain then takes these frequencies and has to create some sort of vision or an illusion or whatever it is, and it then shows as something terrifying or scary. And that's just a very simple thing, and this is such a deep topic, because
it really
for the most
is.
Part that's what that is. And then there's other, you know, subsections of this. So then all of a sudden we have spirit shadow creatures, and I know that my children had shadow creatures, and once I was in bed with my two-year-old, and he woke up because he said he was being pinched by crabs, and we literally lifted up the covers and looked next to him, and there was hundreds of these little, they looked like crabs, like sand crabs, and we actually brushed them off. So things can happen, but they're not necessarily really, truly trying to hurt you.
Were they physical?
They were spiritual, so they were almost solid, but not solid. So there was more of...
How did you brush off something that wasn't physical?
Because what would you do if you saw crabs? You brush them off. I guess you wanted to get rid of it, because you don't know. I mean, when you're waking up in the middle of the night and you see something like that, it can be very, very scary.
I've had a couple exorcists on the program over the past couple weeks. What do you think of those things, exorcisms?
That's another good question. I think that there are ways to help a person get into a state of mind that might not have things happening to them. So when we have a person that, let's say, has an evil streak, okay, that isn't spiritual. What's happening is we have something wrong biologically in this body, and it's going to be in our brain, and it is basically short-circuiting. So maybe there's a chemical imbalance, maybe there's an electrical imbalance or some sort of injury. Something in their childhood helped develop certain areas of the brain and shut off other areas of the brain and created, you know, somebody that has a lack or an ability to have empathy. And that is physically based. And so so what the exorcism is doing is it's going in there and it's trying to attempt to eradicate some of these physical or biochemical with the body.
I always have a little water next to you.
I know, exactly.
Secret trick.
This morning it was kind of funny because I didn't realize I needed to have a landline, so I ran out of the house full speed and am now in the hotel, so I didn't get anything.
How's the battery life? Is it a cordless or?
Oh, now I'm on a landline now.
Oh, great.
In the hotel.
Perfect.
But so I think when we talk about exorcism, you know, that is also a religious based
Yes, well, it's primarily with Catholics, but most religions do have exorcists.
They have, they have forms of that, and usually it's more ceremony than it is actually doing something.
What do you think of karma? What is karma to you?
Well, karma to me, I think that we play out karma all the time, every single day of our life. I don't believe that we are coming back here because of something we did in a former life. I believe that every life is absolutely complete when we leave this iteration of our life. Now, we might live out different iterations of lives and different life experiences, but our life, like Maren Muter right now, is playing out every possible scenario that I could possibly play out, and it's creating a whole understanding, a whole existence. So when we're looking at that, and I'll try to do this brief and quickly, but when we're looking at that, this is where quantum entanglement and quantum superposition, we'll just use those two because those are very more mainstream.
Okay.
You've heard of it more. But when you have one particle that can be in multiple places at the exact same time, that's basically what's happening with us. Now, when we are created, we actually create a firework. So at our inception, we have a zinc explosion, and it's like a firework. And again, this is very, very basic. I'm doing this very, very basically. So for a moment, I'd like you to just imagine a big boomer firework on the 4th of July. Now, that firework goes up, and it explodes, and it's huge. And so you've got really long trajectories of light, and you have shorter trajectories of light, and they fizzle out. But they all fizzle out about the exact same time, whether it's in the center or out at the edge. And that's basically what's happening to us. So when the sperm hits the egg, there's a zinc explosion. And with that zinc explosion, millions of little trajectories go off. And our particle, us, is on every single one of those trajectories simultaneously. And every single one of those trajectories has a little choice. You know, you make decisions, and you have to play out both of those decisions. And in the end, maybe some of those trajectories didn't last past inception. Maybe some of those trajectories were miscarried. Maybe some of those trajectories died as children. Maybe some of them made it all the way out to 108 years old. And they play out decisions. So you make a decision, let's say that you wanted ice cream, and you couldn't decide if you wanted chocolate or vanilla. Well, you actually end up making both of those decisions. The thing is as a human being, we can only really focus on the trajectory we're on, even though we're on multiple. So this is where it gets confusing. And every trajectory we're on believes that's the only one that we are on. So the Marin that chose the vanilla ice cream believes that I chose the vanilla ice cream, and that is the only trajectory that I am on. I cannot see these other trajectories. And the Marin that made the decision to have chocolate ice cream believes that that chocolate ice cream decision is the only decision that I made, and I did not pick the vanilla. But when we die, when our life here is done, what happens is all of these different decisions, good and bad, so Marin the bank robber and Marin the one that was robbed, come together. And this is where we get that depth of compassion, that depth of understanding that we were talking about in the beginning. And that is what carries up over. And so what does that create? That creates an orb. It creates a spherical ball, because it is three-dimensional, four-dimensional. I mean, it's multidimensional.
Are you a believer in what goes around comes around?
Well, then if we're talking about what I'm talking about right now, then yes, because we are going to be both a bank robber and, so somewhere right now I am a bank robber, and somewhere right now I am being robbed by a bank. So I'm playing out both of those. Both of those scenarios are happening in my life.
And how many different scenarios can there be?
Billions. Just think of our brain right now. Our brain itself has like 86 billion neurons and billions and billions of receptors in our brain. That's more than all the stars combined in our galaxy.
Why, Marion, do bad things happen to good people?
Well, bad things happen to good people, and good things happen to good people, and good things happen to bad people. It's just, it's part of the conglomeration of what we were talking about, of creating a depth of compassion. So it doesn't seem fair. Life doesn't seem fair a lot. But in the end, it will balance out. And in the end, it will create harmony. And I know that life can be hard. I know the severe pain that life can bring. I, you know, I've experienced it myself. And I know people that have very hard times in life. But there's also this balance, this harmony that it will create. And I just want people to know that it really will be beautiful, and it really is beautiful, and there's a rhyme and reason for it all, even if it doesn't make sense to us right now.
Of all these letters that you buried between the ages of 4 and 17, those that you went and regrouped and recaptured, do you still have them?
I do. Yes, I do. I can, you know, I'd like to share a couple if that's okay.
Yeah, I was going to ask you to.
Yeah. So I'm going to share one because we were talking about scary things happening to us. And this is actually a dream that I had that was actually the foreshadowing of my son's death.
And then you wrote the letter?
And I wrote the letter.
Okay.
So this is a foreshadowing. And this is going to show a little bit on how things scary might not be super scary. They're there for a reason. So it says, "Dear Flower Lady, there is something lurking in the shadows, a foretelling. In the garden maze next to the windows, I played in my dream. The sun set, I was in my room beneath the covers. From the woods at the far edge of the maze," and it wasn't really a maze, just as a kid I thought it was a maze, just so you know.
All right.
"The maze emerged a being I cannot describe other than death, and beside that a shadow of a head. At first, it wasn't scary, but as it glided down the row of hedges to the French doors into the library," which, again, it wasn't really a library. It was more of a bookshelf. "Its darkness became prevalent, and it was warning of death, a warning I cannot stop. The death will be instant, but not my own, but it will feel as though it was. Part of me will die in the setting sun, desperate." I'm going to cry. "The beings focused on me as they made their way through the maze. You cannot alter the path, no matter what you do, the fate is set. Patience. The panic started rising and I awoke frozen. And then I got out of bed and went downstairs, skirting the hallway to my parents' room. They were asleep. I didn't want to wake them. I just stared, with my heart begging one of them to wake up and comfort me. And then I went back upstairs. I decided I will change fate. I will change this path so this tragedy doesn't happen. But what was it? A body without a head without a body.
Jeez.
Spirit that is part of me."
How old were you when you wrote that?
I was probably 7.
You were pretty spiritually inclined, even at that age. My God, I can imagine the ones you wrote at 4.
Well, here, I can read you one that I wrote at 5.
Just give us a short little clip of it.
Okay, it'll be really fast. This is called The Mirror. "I think there may be a reason we cannot really see our own faces without a mirror. I believe we are not meant to focus on ourselves. We are a part of the canvas, and when there isn't a mirror, we can walk into a room and forget ourselves. But with a mirror, people tend to fuss about their hair. They apologize for how they look. They worry about their clothes, and they become a thing. Imagine if mirrors were windows to the landscape outside, with the earth and the trees and the lunar moths and butterflies in the apple trees, with the rains and lightnings and kissing horizon. They would, if that's what people saw when they looked in the mirror, they would feel beautiful. They would feel part of life."
Fascinating. Next hour, we're going to take calls with Marin as we talk about consciousness, karma, the other side, and share your stories with us, too. What would you say is the most profound thing, Marin, that has ever happened to you?
Oh, my gosh. There's a lot of profound things that have ever happened to me. I would say that right now, obviously, one of the biggest, most profound things was the death of my son. He struggled with post-traumatic stress disorder and took his life.
Oh, I'm just sorry. How old was he when that happened?
22.
Oh, so sorry to hear that.
Thank you. And I would say that that is probably one of the most profound things that ever happened to me, because when I visualized it, I mean, there are so many things that happened afterwards, especially, you know, with his
Was he in the military at all?
Yes, he was an Army Ranger.
He was, okay.
When I would imagine this scene play out at the setting sun on October 29th, it was absolutely stunning to me, because I am humbled that I, number one, got to spend 22 years of life with him, but I got to see the beginning and the end of a life. I got to see the full circuit, and absolutely how devastatingly painful that was, and absolutely how stunningly beautiful it was I was able to witness this. So I would say that is probably one of the most profound and beautiful moments of my life.
Good for you. Well, we're coming up on Veterans Day on Thursday, and he's one of those that we'll honor for what he did for our country as well when he served. Marin, we're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back and take phone calls with you next.